University with a degree in philosophy and political science. He's also a graduate of Covenant Theological Seminary, which is a seminary that's affiliated with the Presbyterian Church in America. And he is currently a PhD student at St. Louis University in the Theological Studies Department. What else should I say about Jonathan? Let me think. He is has an encyclopedic knowledge of popular culture. So if you want to talk with him about any topic from, you know, past episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica. So he may be the past master in that particular area. But I'm constantly learning from him. And actually not just the sort of pop culture, but went over to his house the other day and he was showing me these DVDs a couple that I've never heard of that do architectural design and building design, and he was just interested in this, got the DVD off the internet. He also has put together some marvelous music samplers for me of bands that I've never heard of. A couple of them I heard of through my 18-year-old daughter, but he's much more better acquainted with music, with culture. I think one of the things you're going to find out, too, even through his presentation, is he has actually had his moment in the media spotlight when he was interviewed. Was it ABC Morning News? All of them, because of his role in putting together the short little video clip that was downloaded by, a couple hundred thousand people. This is during the midst of an American political campaign. So he had his Andy Warhol 15 minutes of fame at that time, and you're getting him in the afterglow. So without further ado, here's Jonathan Barlow.
You were really nice not to mention my dissertation that's been languishing, so. The topic is connecting Christian leaders through the internet, and so obviously communication is going to be a big part of what we talk about, but I have some more basic things to talk about first, just in general, how the internet can be used in ministry, how it can be used to help you guys in what you do every day as ministers. You might have heard of this already. Time's Person of the Year was you. It's sort of a dodge, right, to give a collective Person of the Year. Probably Ahmadinejad or somebody like that really should have been the Person of the Year, but anyway, the person is you. There I am taking a picture of me in the middle there. So maybe that's just the narcissism of American culture or whatever. But what Time Magazine is recognizing is that people are starting to contribute to the internet, the content. It's no longer ABC, CBS, Fox News, that sort of stuff. It's people like you and me who are doing citizen reporting, maybe taking pictures in your neighborhood, maybe designing a whole website around exposing the corruption of some political or religious leader. So Time is recognizing that. So today we're going to do a little introduction, and then we're going to talk about the promise of the internet, the perils of the internet, and then we're going to talk a little bit about ways that we can connect, very practical nuts and bolts ways that we might continue this sort of fellowship of leaders. There'll be a little Q&A if you need it, and then we're going to have a breakout, and I have some discussion questions that relate to some of the things that I'll talk about. I talk really fast, I'm sorry, I'll try to slow it down, but I'm just, you know, hyperactive from birth, so it's kind of the way it goes. I've got the doctors to prove it. So you might recognize some of these. Do you recognize any of these? Up here we have Howard Dean in the political campaign. 2004, he looked like he was doing pretty well until the primary, at which he did his famous scream. You know, we're going to Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia, and whatever, and he goes, yeah! All right, this is Lazy Sunday, which is sort of a spoof of gangster rap that's about two nerds in New York City going to see the Chronicles of Narnia. This is a Christian youth group with a little too much time on its hands that did Baby Got Book. It's sort of a spoof of the Sir Mix-a-Lot Baby Got Back video, so it's all about people with Bibles. And this is Chris Bliss. He's a comedian and a real Beatles lover. And there he is doing a juggling routine synchronized to the last three songs on Abbey Road. So I use the one in the bottom right-hand corner to teach my students about Christian spirituality because he's really into the whole juggling thing. So you recognize some of these things, and they've all changed culture in various ways. The guy on the right up there in the right-hand corner, his name is Andy Samberg. He was an unknown person. He just started putting funny stuff on the internet, and now he works for Saturday Night Live, and his video there, you know, it's a sensation on the internet. Chris Bliss, you know, you're running the mill comedian. He's not that great of a juggler, right? I mean, he could do three balls very well. But now everyone knows who he is, basically. And then Howard Dean, his whole political campaign was derailed by something caught on tape. And the very next day, now this was before video on the internet, there was some video on the internet, but people posted the sound, the audio of his presentation, and it sort of derailed his campaign. Now the internet was begun by DARPA. I need to get my notes here to make sure I get the acronym correct for you. DARPA is the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. So we're talking Cold War, we're talking, the military-industrial complex, we're talking, Terminator 2 and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so in a way, using the internet for ministry, using the internet for charity, we are plundering the Egyptians in a way, right? You know that expression, plundering the Egyptians? When the children of Israel left Egypt, they took with them the gold and the silver from the Egyptians. And in that way, using the internet for what we're using it for now is an amazing inversion of the original purpose. Now, the internet was just a network of computers all connected together, doing very boring things and all geared toward national defense and maybe a little bit of email. A guy named Tim Berners-Lee came along, and he was a guy like me who has a lot of trouble remembering things, and he liked to write them down. And so he built this network, this conceptual network, where he could browse to various topics, and each piece of text could link to another piece of text. And so Tim Berners-Lee, who's at CERN, which is a supercomputing center for particle physics near Geneva. So, not just Calvinism comes out of Geneva. You've got the World Wide Web and other things like that. So Tim Berners-Lee is the father of the internet. He's probably made less money off of the internet than anyone. He's very kind of a virtuous, noble person who sees the internet as a socially transforming technology. Now, the first promise of the internet, so we're going to look at some promises. The first promise is communication. Christians have always used the technology du jour to preach and spread the gospel. You can think about Christian radio, the early days of the evangelists. You can think of negative examples of some maybe nativist-type rhetoric in America and, kind of scaremongering and so forth. But radio, television, these are all things that have been used by Christians to spread the gospel in good and bad ways. Now, the thing about radio, television, and I added fax in there as well, is that these are one-way technologies, okay? It's a person sending a message to people, and it just goes out one way. Telephone is two-way, so it's a good advancement. They also had telegraph, of course. And so with telephones, leaders can connect and discuss things, but previously, telephone technology is very expensive, right? You had long-distance charges and so forth, so it wasn't kind of the revolution that the internet is. The internet is two-way, it's in-way, meaning any number of ways people can connect to the internet. They can connect simultaneously. Email is nice because suppose you live in a town where you have electricity 3 hours a day. Well, you can send out email during that 3 hours a day, and then the next day when the power comes back on, like my friend Leon Tambing in India, when his power comes back on, he's able to check all the email. There's an asynchrony there to that conversation that transcends time zones. Doesn't matter that Leon is reading the message at noon. It was sent, at 10 o'clock at night in the Midwest, so the time zones are really obliterated. That's a Harry Potter reference, the Obliviator curse. Okay, the promise of the internet for education. There are resources online, the promise of maybe virtual seminaries. I know that a big need around the world is the training of leaders, the training of Christians to go out and do the things they need to do. And there's even tools for study, and I'll show you some of these. Now, this is a website of the seminary I attended, Covenant Seminary here in St. Louis, and they've started this thing called Covenant Worldwide, and here's what they've done. They've taken the entire Masters of Arts curriculum, and they've made MP3s of every lecture, of every course in the curriculum, and they put them online for free to be downloaded anywhere in the world. And then what they've also done, now these are in English, of course, but they've also transcribed every course into text. And then what their plan is to get native speakers of other languages in other countries to translate all the courses and then read them back into a recording equipment. And they'll end up with an online seminary with audio and text for any language that can be done. And that's kind of nice. And obviously the seminary is Presbyterian, and so you're going to have courses about Francis Schaeffer the later years. That's pretty specific. You might prefer to focus on some other person. But look at the courses here. Ancient and medieval church history, they have apologetics and outreach. There's courses on Old Testament books, the prophets, the historical books. And then look at the loci of theology, humanity, Christ, and redemption. What else here? We have Spirit Church and Last Things, which is, the Holy Spirit, ecclesiology, eschatology. And all these are free online right now. You can download them. Another thing is sermons. This is a site called sermonaudio.com, and there are more like this. And in a way, you can download sermons from, you know, thousands of preachers all around the world. This presentation is a little bit America-centric in that I used examples that I tend to know about because I'm here. But, you know, all of these have analogs in other countries. And you see, with Sermon Audio, you can find, I want to see every sermon preached on 1 Corinthians, you know, 11 or something like that. I want to find out about the Lord's Supper or something. So you can listen to sermons from other countries. People that are without a preacher or who are having to meet in secret can download sermons and listen to them. It's a way to get teaching. It doesn't substitute for an embodied representative of Christ, of course, but it is nice to have these sermons. Now, the other thing that's really been revolutionary is the increase in tools that you can actually use on the internet. When I was in seminary, in order to make it look like I really knew my Greek very well, I spent a lot of money for a software program that enabled me to look at the Greek text of the New Testament or the Hebrew text of the Old Testament, parse the words, find out, you know, how they're used in context. It was great. My professors totally bought it. They really believed that I knew my Greek backwards and forwards. But now you don't have to have that amount of money to be able to do the same kind of study. It's on the internet. If you have a browser at a public library or wherever, this is a site called Next Bible. You can compare translations. You can look at the Greek and Hebrew. They have notes. So there'll be exegetical notes at the bottom of the screen even. Another site, it's really fantastic. This one's Zubert.com. Notice this one is all based upon the original languages. So if you know your original languages, Greek and Hebrew, then you can actually pass your cursor. Now, I did a screen capture there so you can see. I passed my cursor over sabbaton, the word for Sabbath, and you can see the lexical notes about that word right there. But that's free right now. You can go to the internet and use that without paying any kind of fee or anything. Another thing that's a good promise for the internet is fundraising. I don't, you know, mean to be crass, but you know, the worker is worthy of the wage, right? So ministries need money. You need money for facilities and so forth. The nice thing about the internet is that you can accept online donations. You can present your ministry online. And suppose you have a business card in your pocket, and all it has is a web address on it. Well, that business card can turn into someone could go home with that business card. Suppose someone takes the card secretly from you. Suppose they're with their family and their family's of another religion, and they take that card secretly from you, and then later, on the down low, they can check your website out, and they can learn all about your ministry and what it is that you believe and what it is that you want to teach. So, and then, you know, of course, the donation part at the end. PayPal is a real prominent one that it allows you to make online payments. There's another problem, too. I mean, have you ever tried to buy a book from Italy in the United States? I mean, how do you pay them? How do you pay them? Unless you have an Italian bank account or something that you can draw in euros, it's very difficult. And the nice thing about PayPal is that it manages the currency exchange for you. And right now, these are the countries that have full participation in PayPal. Okay. Notice China there, Italy, Spain, Switzerland, Australia. They also allow various levels of service in all of these countries. So you can probably see your flag there. Your brain is probably trained with pattern recognition to spot your flag immediately. And here's a list of the ones that can receive money. So if you've got a ministry in any of these countries, you can actually still receive money through PayPal, even if you can't do other kinds of transactions. The nice thing about that is people can donate secretly. People can donate anonymously. People can donate from all over the world. If they like what you're doing and they like the way you presented it, they can donate. Another promise of the internet is accountability. You know, would there have been a press in Eden? Suppose a perfect world with perfect leaders who always do what they're supposed to do. Would you need a press? Would you need a newspaper or some sort of investigative reporting? I think you probably would, right? Because even good intentions sometimes go wrong and money is misspent. I think we're just seeing the beginning of this internet citizen reporting on religious topics. We've had it for years with political reporting and educational reporting and all of that, and now we're finally seeing it with religious topics. People are reporting on their leaders, reporting on their religious leaders. The Vatican has a podcast. Did you know that the Vatican has a podcast? A podcast is a piece of audio or video, actually, a piece of audio or video that is downloaded regularly through a news feed. Okay, so I can count on every Tuesday I can watch NBC's Meet the Press on a podcast. It just loads automatically into my podcast reader, and I get to listen to Tim Russert grill whoever it is that he's interviewing. Same thing with the Vatican. You can sign up for a podcast, and every Tuesday or whenever it is that it's available, you download the audio and you can listen to it. Your ministry could have a podcast. Your supporters every whatever frequency, maybe every month or every week, they can count on hearing from you, and you can instruct them, or you can even just tell how your ministry is going. Speaking truth to power has always been tricky. The printing press is great, but you know what? You can always track down the physical location of a printing press, right? You can shut it down. You can break the gears, right? But the internet is so decentralized, no matter what country you're in, you can have a server in any other country, right? I have two servers in a building downtown in St. Louis that I host websites on for my customers. And that building is full. I was told by the owner of the building that 80% of the servers in that building are for companies and organizations that are overseas. So, you know, find a country that's free for now, put servers there, and then you can broadcast to the countries that aren't free. So it's an interesting technique. You might have heard of the Drudge Report. I don't know if you've ever seen this guy before. Recently, some political memoirs have come out from reporters during the last couple of administrations. And these reporters themselves have said that this one guy, Matt Drudge, sets the agenda for the newsrooms of all the major networks. He got his start as a kid out of high school, didn't go to college, and he was in working in Hollywood, and he noticed that they threw away the box office receipts in the trash every day. So he pulled them out, reported them on the internet, and pretty soon his site started to have a following because people wanted to know which movies were making the most money. But now, Matt Drudge, for instance, is notorious because he's the one that broke the Monica Lewinsky scandal during the Clinton administration. And that was because the reporters at Newsweek were afraid their story was going to be terminated. And so they just called up Drudge and said, hey, why don't you report on this? And he did, and it got around the editors. Another thing for ministries, the music and liturgical information that you can get on the internet for your ministries. There are online hymn repositories. There are electronic files in MIDI format. A MIDI is a language that it's been around for a long time, that a lot of keyboards, that's a MIDI keyboard probably. And it enables, it's just a description, almost like notation for a computer to read, of the notes and the stress and the volume and so forth. And suppose you're in a place without an organ or without a way to really play music, or you're not even gifted, you can download MIDI files and just hit play on your computer. I even kind of for fun download those MIDI files sometimes, and add some drums or whatever you can do to these very staid songs. There are online lectionaries and calendar planning. If you can't remember what year of the lectionary we're using, are we on track one or two? If you can't remember that kind of stuff, it's all online. Here is a particular, this is a denomination. I had a hand in designing and implementing this website, and they have a search. You know, the Trinity hymnal is the hymnal that they use. You can search by keyword, come up with the hymn, and then there's the MIDI file right there for playing or downloading. So it's very easy to find hymns and so forth. Another phenomenon is happening is the taking old hymn texts and putting new tunes to them. Here's a site that gives you the hymn itself. And then you see there's some downloads there. There's a lead sheet, which is a sheet that you could use when you're leading the music. There is a chord chart for playing guitar. Obviously, it's sort of guitar-centric. And there's an overhead projector sheet that you can just print out and use in worship. So these resources are all very accessible. The promise of the internet for demographics and planning. You can get geographic information from the internet that you wouldn't believe. You can find out, I did a search the other day on some satellite data to see what it looked like after Katrina, just around my parents' neighborhood. And the satellite data happened to be taken right around the time that Katrina hit, and I could see all of the blue tarps shining in the sun from the satellite looking down on them. So it's kind of an amazing sight. You can figure out, I want to plant a church in this city. Where is there already a density of churches? You can figure that out, that information, and put a church where there's not very many churches. You can also do detective work. So here's some detective work. This is Zillow.com. It tells you all information you need to know about housing and real estate. I typed in my address. It's a house I'm renting, and I found out what it's worth. Found out it's worth a lot less than the guy said it was worth if I wanted to buy it. But look at this neighborhood. I can tell what all the houses in the neighborhood cost, right? What does that tell you? It tells you about the area. It tells you how expensive it is to live there. It's a lot of information you can get about people's houses. Google is another way. Just put whatever you want in quotes into Google. Okay, so suppose you want to search Jonathan Barlow. Please don't do that. Put Jonathan Barlow in quotes and search it, and you'll come up with information. So who wants to cop to being in this picture? Does anybody want to? Okay, right there. Right. Tell us your name. Carrie. Okay, so I typed in Carrie's name in Google, and up came a picture of Carrie with a... Tell us the context. Okay, so this is your executive board on campus ministry. Now, all I have is your name, and suddenly I have a picture of you, right? So now all I have to do is modify that picture so that you're in a, you know, some sort of a compromising scene with a politician, and, you know, we're set, right? So, okay. What about this one? Someone in here put 7,000 miles on a VW pickup truck that was modified to use vegetable oil. Who wants to admit to doing that? Yes, Aaron. Aaron. Knowing only Aaron's name, I determined that he is he's a veggie. He's into the green lifestyle or something like that, and he put 7,000 miles on a VW pickup truck that runs just like Willie Nelson's bus on biodiesel. So pretty amazing. So then I typed Dr. Michael McClyman's name into a white pages somewhere just to find out what his address was, and it ended up being on Girard Place. Okay. We might have a mimetic rivalry brewing here about Girard, right? So then I did a little map, and there's Michael McClyman's house. I just typed his address in. There's his house, right? I can tell where he lives. Now, this is good in some ways, right? You can figure out where people are if you need to get to them. But it's also bad. Suppose I called Mike and said, Mike, I'm a prophet. And I've never met you before, but I know tomorrow there's going to be a little girl playing in the cul-de-sac by your house. And he'll say, wow, how did he know there's a cul-de-sac by my house, right? So there's danger in this information, too. You can also, everything that's good can be used for ill as well. So that's Dr. Mike's house if you want to drop in sometime. Now, the perils of the Internet. What are the perils of the Internet? This is the digital divide. There are inequalities built in to this world, for various reasons, for talent, for one. That's just a basic one. But, geography, money, government, stability, all those things play in and make inequality just a part of human life. And there's a gap. The digital divide is technically the gap between those with regular, effective access to digital technologies and those without regular, effective access. Now, locally, in a town like St. Louis, we have a digital divide, right? Depends on where you live. The St. Louis public library system is amazing, but there are neighborhoods in St. Louis where there are no libraries, and you have to drive an hour to get a gallon of milk, right? Grocery stores are not even in every neighborhood in America, so... there's trouble with that. Connectivity, computer speed, DSL and high-speed internet, it isn't available everywhere. And computer speed, a new computer works better than an older one, so it's just a fact of life. On the global scale, there are areas of poverty that do not have connectivity, right? There are areas of lawlessness where people steal the copper in the ground on which the electricity and the fiber optic and so forth, they're all interrupted by vandalism and so forth. And just having computers simpliciter, even just having a computer, is a difficult thing in some places. There are generational issues, right? We all know that when you go home for Christmas break or when you go home for holiday, it's time for that holiday tech consultation with your parents where you defrag their hard drive and remove all the viruses, and they ask you to, I want to get on the internet, John. How do I get on that internet? That's what they might say. So there are generational issues. I mean, ministry, the gospel comes to all people, age, sex, place, whatever. And so how do you reach people if you're focusing a lot of attention on the internet? What are you missing? People that don't have email, for instance. There are probably some Christian leaders that would be amazing to be in our midst right now but aren't because of connectivity issues, right? I mean, think about those folks that could be here and really enrich us, but they just don't have access. And this digital divide is very hard to measure because, a lot of countries are better than America on the score of having internet cafes, right? I mean, you go into a big city in most countries and they have internet cafes where you can pay by the minute, and there's not a lot of that kind of stuff in America. You either have to depend upon a public library or someone else. We're a little bit more individualistic in that regard. So you can't always just conclude by where someone lives if they have no internet access, because quite a few do. Another thing is the money it takes for equipment, the money for connectivity, the money for infrastructure. The know-how, it costs money to train people in computing. Copyright costs, I mean, Microsoft, what does it cost, $100 for an operating system, right? So what about open source, free operating systems like Linux and so forth? But those are not a panacea either, because you have to be trained on how to use those, and anyone who's ever used Linux knows that it's difficult. Copyright costs for music, for church music, right? Anybody ever bought church music before? Know how expensive it is per sheet, per person? So the question is, can Christian leaders mediate the net? Suppose you're in a place where you're the only link between a community and the internet. Can you mediate the internet and its riches to the people that you're ministering to? To whom you're ministering. I ended with a preposition there. This is a program a lot of people criticize. It's called One Laptop Per Child. Don't know if you've heard of this. Their goal is to build 100 million of these little green laptops. Now, this was an earlier picture that has a hand crank to generate the power for the laptop. I think they've moved away from that. The idea is that every kid in the world should have a laptop. They have antennas. They all form a network together. And so whoever the kid is closest to town starts the internet feed, and then all the kids throughout the country, the connectivity goes to them. Now, this sounds a little bit like some very zealous, you know, geeks who are feel like they have a utopian vision of the world or something, right? But come on, you know, we can hope that this could happen. So their idea is to get these laptops down to $100 and then to get people to donate money. So you could say, hey, if you give me $500, I can put 5 laptops in the hands of kids around the world. Let's do it. What do I think about that idea? Well, I mean, if you have water and electricity and you have stable government and so forth, then maybe so. But, you know, it's hard. I don't know. It's hard to be purist about that kind of stuff because you never know what's going to make the situation better anywhere. I mean, it could be the internet really helps things. You know, it could be that you find a plan for a pump on the internet and you get water that way. I just don't know. So, oh, every child having a computer. I don't know. I mean, I think part of it is designed by older people who wish they themselves could use the computer as well as their children could. So maybe, I don't know. But, you know, here in America, my children know so much more about these things than I do. I mean, it's amazing. I have an autistic son, and he, you know, even though I can barely have a conversation with him about what he did today, he can go on the internet and find any movie trailer he wants. He knows the director and the best boy grip and the producer of every movie he's ever seen. So I have no clue. So I'll leave my opinion out of it, but, you know, just wanted to tell you about it. Now, the perils of the internet is miscommunication. Emoticons just aren't good enough. Now, I learned this from Dr. Mike. This is an emoticon, right? It's a spirit-filled believer in a sea of the Holy Spirit there. That's an emoticon I hadn't seen before. A lot of times, you just put a smiley face after you make a joke. But, you know, face-to-face communication is still a necessity. Sarcasm, irony, even the cultural allusions that I just can't help but put into what I say that makes some of you wrinkle your brow, I'm sure. All these things are just, you know, it's impossible to know how to say over the internet. The text really is hard to, unless you're just like a Jane Austen, it's really tough to really convey language in written form as well as you can physically. And there's language barriers. There is no universal translator yet, although I understand at the Consumer Electronics Show today, there is a demonstration for an oral translator. You just speak the language into the laptop and it spits out Farsi or whatever. The perils of the internet, salacious material, these cause pastoral problems. People that would never go down to the corner store and be caught dead buying pornography can get it on the internet in the privacy of their homes. Pornography also victimizes people. People that are powerless can get even more powerless when there's a motivation to, you know, make them sexual slaves. And there are, you know, people that are slaves to this industry around the world. Gambling as well. Gambling is, I mean, maybe there's some good forms of gambling or something, but, you know, in general, if you have a little bit of money for your family and it all goes to gambling, that can be a problem. So it makes a social problem. There are swinging sites so that, you know, what formerly was done surreptitiously through winks and nods and so forth, you can just get online and register to cheat on your spouse, right? You just sign up and say, I'd like to cheat on this night. Who's available? Okay? So what kind of pastoral problems does that present to ministry? There's blasphemous humor on the internet. I mean, obviously, you know, let a thousand flowers bloom and all that, but, you know, a lot of young believers don't know how to handle things like that. The new atheism, you might have heard of the new atheism. They have some very cogent-sounding arguments against religious belief in general, so you have to be prepared for a very educated people in your churches that ask the right questions. I saw this book. I mean, you know, it's just a rampant problem. Now, this is a pamphlet, Confronting Your Spouse's Addiction to Pornography. And you got sites like this that are, A, very gauche. I mean, look at this site. Come on. It's an explosion of color and sound. But the idea is to excite people and get them to part with their money. Another peril is the government control. A lot of you probably deal with that a lot in where you live. There's censorship. research is done to catch ministers and missionaries. I do a lot of church websites, and I'd say probably two or three times a year I get a frantic call from a pastor who says, hey, we mentioned a missionary at a conference at our church. You got to take his name off the site because the authorities in his country are doing Google searches to find out who the missionaries are there so they can arrest them. So you know, this stuff, you got to think, no matter where you are, you got to be careful what you put on the internet. And then there's copyright violations, and there's some good and bad to this. I mean, I'll leave that out. That's not important to talk about. This is a picture of a computer in the United Arab Emirates, and this is some guy at a cafe in the United Arab Emirates, and he ran into some content that the leaders of UAE did not want him to see, and so he gets this screen that says, sorry, you can't see that, right? So there's censorship. What about church discipline? What about church discipline? Now, we all know the details of Donald Trump's latest divorce or, you know, the misdeeds of the monarchy in various countries. But what about, you know, Joe and Sue in your church who are getting a divorce? Should that end up on the internet? Is that a legitimate thing to be reported on? People can circularize a court. There can be retribution and libel and slander. Can you sue a believer who slanders you? You know, the old principle not to sue fellow believers. This is a site, for instance, called Ministry Watchmen. And this is basically a couple who's a little disgruntled with a minister, and they put this site up, and they're trying to drag all the dirt, real and imagined, out into the public. There's even a whole site dedicated to this called Who is Miss Binoculars? There's another website to determine who she is. And they have a computer-enhanced, you know, here's a picture of who we think it is, and then let's superimpose the binoculars, and there's the nose fits, so they figured it out, right? Scams. There can be very religious appeals. You might get an email that says, I am Deacon Smith from such and such a province. I have money that needs to get out of the country. Can you please provide me your bank account information? I'll give you, you know, we'll put the $12 million in there, and then when I get to America, you can give me $11 million, and then you can keep $1 million. I mean, it sounds like a great deal, and people are losing their shirts on this kind of stuff. And it really makes real charity suspect. So you've got to be careful that you know what these fake letters look like so that when you send out fundraising letters, they don't look like that, right? Right? That's the worst. You do not want someone to suspect you just because of the format. This is a person who was arrested for this kind of activity. He called himself Prince Ibo, okay, and he sent emails out. And what happened is that some rascals in America, some rascally kids in America, decided to play with the scammer, okay. And they told him, well, you know, we could give you money, but we're in a religious sect called the Church of the Painted Breast, and we'll only give you this money if you will join our sect. We've attached a picture that shows you how to be inducted. And so, you know, they were playing tennis one day and snapped a picture. So then he took Photoshop and put the symbol of the Church of the Painted Breast on there. And they sent the picture and said, now, if you just join up, then we can give you our information. So they got this picture back in the mail, right? So that shows dedication, right? It shows dedication to the scam, dedication to wanting to getting the money. Another peril of the internet is the difference between appearance and reality. With stock photography, every ministry can be diverse, right? Just find the right stock photography that has the right mix of people, all fellowshipping. Every preacher can have gleaming, sparkling teeth. Oh, sure. No problem. Sure. That's fine. So, you know, how can you have authenticity? How can you be a broken servant serving the needs of others and yet also have a website that looks like it's for one of Trump's casinos or something, right? So there's a big difference between appearance and reality. You might have seen the Dove campaign. This is a one-minute video. Here's a model, a very beautiful person with a very beautiful bone structure. And watch how, with Photoshop and enhancements, she goes from the makeup room to a billboard. Makeup. Lighting, wind, Photoshop, make her neck longer, make her neck skinnier, make her eyes bigger. They didn't change her cheekbones, that's why you have models, I guess. And then she gets on a billboard, right? Appearance versus reality. So we recognize this in popular culture. We recognize that young girls are forced to see this kind of stuff all the time, and you know, it's just not. That's the "Every Girl Deserves to Feel Beautiful" campaign from the Dove soap company. Now they're probably just trying to sell more soap, right? I mean, let's be frank. You know, it's kind of anti-advertising. But at the same time, it's a real problem. And with a ministry, one time I did a website for a little church, and I always feel guilty about doing this. The minister of the church sent me this photograph of the congregation worshiping. So what do you notice? First of all, they're all grouped together, right? That way, with a close-up and with clever cropping, I can make it look like a huge, very full sanctuary. Notice the walls with this lovely lemon yellow color from 81. There's the front. You know, we have the little frilly language at the front with the Bible verses on the wall. Okay, these are great people. I actually preached at this church one time. So then I had to make a website, and they wanted to appeal to younger people. And so here's what I came up with. Now, that looks pretty cool, right? I mean, that's a pretty cool church. They've got the warmer color on the walls, right? They really don't. And everything looks really edgy and hard-lit. And notice in the picture, there's 2 out of 3 of the people in the picture are young, right? But that's really not reflective of the church in general. Okay, so there's appearance versus reality. How do you sell your ministry? It's a crass economic metaphor, but how do you promote your ministry without also lying, in a sense? Plagiarism is another peril. There's just an epidemic of press reports about pastors who are coming under discipline for plagiarizing sermons. I have one I could read here. I'll just leave it out, but there's a press story just the other day about a pastor who was defrocked because of just basically downloading a sermon and delivering it as if it were the pastor's sermon. So if you pass another's work off as your own, then you're plagiarizing. That's all there is to it, right? Now, the good thing, though, I mean, what's to keep 4 ministers in a city from getting together once a week, sharing their notes, and doing the work for each other? We're all going to preach through Colossians this year, and they all get together and share notes. What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, as long as you're upfront about it, it can give you more time for ministry to people in hospitals and so forth. So, you know, collaborate, but you have to be open about it. That's the main deal. Now, here's the ways of connecting. You know about blogs? A blog is like a weblog. It's in reverse chronological order. All right, so here's a weblog. Here's a site called Blogger. They were one of the first companies to offer a quick way to do it. So you can set your own blog. Now, here's a pastor's blog, a teacher. His name is Scott McKnight. Has anyone ever heard of Scott McKnight? Anyway, he's a professor up at North Park University in Chicago. And notice, the featured books are all the ones that he wrote, right? Okay, so he's promoting his books. He's got categories that you can read about Advent. Look, he's written 41 times about Advent. He's written 32 times about the atonement. He's giving people prayers. He's talking about prayer requests for a Christian leader who's sick. He has theological debates on there. These kind of things can connect ministers. I have a blog, and you know, a lot of my friends that are in ministry, we debate the issues fairly spiritedly, you know. And then eventually someone very piously will say, "We're debating while people are out there dying," you know. And so we'll say, "Oh, I'm sorry, we won't debate anymore." But then it becomes a debating club the next week again. So just the way humans are, right? We're very inconsistent. But you can start your own blog very easily for free. There's MySpace, which represents social networking. Social networking is like a community, but it's online. And the neat thing about MySpace, you can set up your interests. You can say, "I like tennis and I like the Lord of the Rings." And then pretty much everyone who likes tennis and the Lord of the Rings will come looking for you and become friends with you. So they become friends with you, right? Friends with you? Okay. We're defining friendship down a bit. Then there's Facebook, right? Facebook used to be just for colleges. Now it's open to everyone. This is my Facebook page. I basically joined so that I could get the lowdown on my students, right? I teach intro level course here, and I can go on all my students' websites and find out what they're struggling with and then gear my syllabus toward that. If I find a lot of students that are dealing with, you know, eating disorders or something, then I'll make sure we talk about that. If I find students that are very atheistic or skeptical, then I'll make sure we put a little, you know, stuff in there about that, because I want it to be interesting. Here is one of the other sides of it. This is my professor page on MySpace. Someone set up a page to critique me as a professor. Now, thankfully, there's only one person that's done it, and I got A+. But notice, he was a real cool teacher. We had homework every night, but it wasn't dreadful. It was just a little busy work, very easy. Well, see, that makes me feel a little bit, you know, like I'm an easy A or something. So Dr. Mike, I looked, they didn't have a critique of you, so that's good, right? Here's YouTube. Now, do you see what that video is on YouTube? YouTube is a site where you can share a video. And the great thing about it is your ministry, you can take a video of what it's like in your neighborhood, right? It's very difficult for people in other countries to imagine how people in other countries live. It's very difficult to imagine what it's like. And so just take your video camera out on the streets, interview people, just walk around. You know how interesting that would be to people? I mean, you'd think it'd be so mundane, right? But somebody somewhere in the world is going to be so interested in just seeing what your town is like and what your people are like. Now, the bad part about it is, and this is a 9/11 truth movement. These are people who believe, you know, that a plane really didn't hit the Pentagon and all that kind of stuff, right? And there's anti-Semitism, there's Holocaust denial, there are, you know, UFOlogy, Bigfoot's on the loose. I mean, anything you can think of. We didn't really land on the moon, that kind of stuff. I mean, all of that stuff is on YouTube, right? It's all a big soup of interesting things. But it doesn't mean that, you know, the gospel doesn't apply to it and that Christians can't contribute to YouTube. This is Flickr. Flickr is like a YouTube for photographs, right? Now, notice this photograph. This is a young child holding a Quran and a toy AK-47. Okay? This was taken in Somalia. But the interesting thing, this was posted. It was posted just a few days before Christmas, right? Now, I don't know if the AP has photos of this, but some guy with a cell phone camera did. All right? So you can find out information from around the world, what's going on. A picture really is worth 1,000 words. Wikipedia. You can start a Wikipedia page about your ministry, for instance, or you can just use Wikipedia as a resource. This is a Wikipedia page for James Brown. Notice, I don't think James Brown died, right? The godfather of soul, right? He died last week, I guess. No, he died on Christmas Day, actually. And already Wikipedia has that he died December 25th, 2006. Now, it'll take Britannia years and years before James Brown's death date enters into their dictionary, into their encyclopedia. But a wiki is a Hawaiian word for fast and easy. That's kind of what I've been told, so I'm not sure if that's true. But anyway, Wikipedia is an encyclopedia that is user-generated. Every article on this website was written by someone just like you and me, just a person, not some kind of scholar on James Brownology or something. Christians have a Theopedia. Of course we would, right? A Theopedia. This is a page for a Christian theologian, Kevin Van Hooser, and it's just a page about his thought and his works. So you could add, an entry for yourself or for someone else if you're feeling magnanimous. And these are resources. And there's a church in the Boston area that has a wiki on its website. And the principle is leave it all open, let everyone talk about it. And you might think that it could cause controversy in a church if everything is out in the open, but you know, sometimes it really helps. Amazon lets you say that things that they sell are horrible. You can go on Amazon and say, I bought this and it was terrible. Right, but Amazon doesn't care that you're deriding their products because they'll know you just go buy another one. So people depend upon feedback. This is a snapshot of iTunes. iTunes is just a piece of software, but this is for podcasting. Now, I looked at the religion and spirituality section of the Apple podcast menu. And, I mean, look at what you can get. You can get a daily audio Bible. So every day you wake up and there's a new bit of scripture in your podcast reader. There's a Relevant magazine. I'm not really familiar with that too much. I'm not very relevant, you know, but that's there. Rosary Army, that's pretty cool. I need to subscribe to the Rosary Army, you know. I think they're accepting recruits, right? But you see the top podcasts, there's Focus on the Family, Joyce Meyer, Mars Hill Bible Church, Let My People Think with Ravi Zacharias, you know, the usual suspects, right? But everyone has a podcast that you can download and listen to. Your ministry can have a podcast. People that are interested in what you're doing. People you're ministering to can check on you without having to set foot in your church and be embarrassed or whatever. Feel comfortable first, you know, and then check you out. Redeemer Radio is a Catholic radio station. It's an AM station, but now everyone in the world can listen to Redeemer Radio, right? So it's really, the internet has taken technologies that were thought dead, radio. Radio was thought dead because TV was where it was at. Now, NPR is one of the most famous sites on the internet. People listen to the articles all the time. We have podcasting, which is a return of radio in a way. TV, right? Is TV the thing of the past? No, because now you can watch TV through the internet. You can watch user-generated content. So the same with photography. I didn't really ever think of myself as a photographer, and probably a lot of my friends didn't until we got a camera where we could take a million pictures with impunity and not have to print them. So all these digital technologies transform things. There's direct chat. This is a theological conversation I had with a friend. All right? So you and another minister here could chat directly. Don't read that, please. Thanks. There's Yahoo groups, and this is what I think we'll probably have to end up doing for this group of folks. We'll just set up a Yahoo group where we can exchange emails and discuss matters. The nice thing about Yahoo groups is that if you don't want to receive email, you can just check it online. So if your internet access is spotty, you don't have to, you know, worry about a lot of email messages coming in. This is a sort of a cranky discussion board where this is the Puritan board, right? So you have to mind your P's and Q's when you go to the Puritan board. And this is a place where people discuss topics from a particular point of view. And there are discussion boards like this for every branch of the faith you can think of. We could set something like that up. This is Dig. Dig is an aggregator, okay? And basically Dig says, what are people really looking at today on the internet? What articles are they really digging? It's a reference to the 70s, the Dig. Okay. But anyway, so look at this. There was the Saddam Hussein's death 9 days ago. That's the top topic in the last 30 days on this site. So that sort of thing. This is a church that has an entire online internet campus. Do you see that? The internet campus? This is their internet campus, okay? You could walk into their Main Street campus or you could go onto the internet campus. You could hear you could hear a sermon. You could join it. You could join a fellowship group. And this is a real church with real online members. Then there's the more traditional. This is just a Presbyterian denomination, and they have all the resources available for the whole denomination, you know, a list of ministers, a church finder, that sort of thing. That's pretty important. So if any of you are leaders of a network of churches, one of the things you've got to be concerned about is allowing people in local areas to find churches. And so the internet's a great place, like a directory for people to find churches. So what about the future? Some people suggest we're becoming cyborgs. You know what a cyborg is? It's an organism that's part machine, part human. Are we becoming cyborgs? And what does this mean for human nature? What about our theological anthropology? Are we going to consider some people to be less valuable because they're not connected to the internet? Because that's one of the things you really have to guard against. What about virtual worlds? Is there religion in a virtual world? Do you need to be a minister to a virtual world? Do virtual worlds need pastors? This is the person who had the first thought-controlled mechanical arm. That's usually what we think of when we think of a cyborg. But what about this cyborg? I think I bump into him almost daily at Barnes & Noble and, you know, walking down the street, okay? All of us that have a cell phone connected to our hip, this guy's got the Bluetooth headset and everything. I mean, he's a total cyborg. And what about the guy sitting alone at night in his T-shirt surfing the web? I mean, I carry that laptop around with me all over the house. I mean, it's kind of wild. And then there's Second Life. Have you heard of Second Life? It is a three-dimensional online community that you can join and be a member of, have a separate life. There's apparently a photograph that someone from Second Life took with a virtual camera in the virtual world. So they might have been on a diving expedition with their friends. So there's a mermaid along for the trip and a scantily clad swimmer and that sort of thing, right? Now, there are people, if you notice this site, there are 2.4 million residents of this virtual world, right? And do they need to be reached for Christ in that virtual world? Does that need to happen? Look at this. U.S. dollars spent in the last 24 hours in this virtual world. This is real dollars to buy things in a virtual world. $1 million in the last 24 hours were spent on this online world. So does it really matter? Can you go online and have a different religion in your virtual world? Is that okay? Or do you need to stick with the one that you believe is true? So I have some questions for discussion here. I'll read through them really quickly. One of them is, how can we be sure our use of online communication does not threaten face-to-face communication? Does the existence of the internet ease your fears about ministering in rural places? After all, everything is available everywhere. So if you're worried about your favorite product or whatever, it's available everywhere. You can still have intellectual conversations with people no matter where you live. What can Christian leaders do about the digital divide? Are we wrong to worry? Are we worried enough? Is citizen reporting on the activities and controversies of the church a positive thing? Would there be a press in Eden? How can leaders encourage transparency without anarchy? How is the internet affecting our theological anthropology? Are we treating unwired humans as somehow defective? And how does the prominence of the internet affect nation states, right? Nation states and their laws only apply within their borders, right? But the internet extends beyond the borders. So, you know, how does that affect nation states? That's a little political thing there for you. So I walked around and I eavesdropped on you, and just listen to what you're talking about. Now, someone mentioned the internet and markets, setting market prices and fair prices. Who was that? Tell us about the internet and market prices in rural places.
Hello. Well, I didn't know that I was on internet, and all our conversations were heard. I was just mentioning about in India, as the internet as an empowering tool for people, those are in especially engaged in farm sector. I read an article. It said if an American farmer he cultivates potato and he sells the potato in the market, he gets around 6 rupees in rupees. I'm talking rupees. Okay, so. If you go and buy a potato in the market, it will be available for maybe 10 rupees per kilogram. And so American farmer would get anywhere 7 rupees for that, for potato. But an Indian farmer would get only 3 rupees or 4 rupees, much less than American farmer. So why is that so? The answer was given because between the farmer and till it goes, the potato goes to a retail chain, there are so many people in between, so many intermediaries or agents. So potato exchanges many hands, so everyone gets their cut. The less minimum, if you do not have many people in between, agents or intermediaries, the farmer is likely to get more price for his potato. But if he has many people in between, the retail and himself, then he will get the less price because they're getting their cut. Recently, in last 2 or 3 years, a new concept that has evolved in India is to give the internet, set up an internet facility in villages. There are a few large Indian transnational companies. They are setting up huge internet facilities or smaller facilities in many villages. What they do is, if this area, people in this area can come. Instead of taking their crops or farm products to faraway markets, all of them can bring it here. And on internet, they can check the price. What is the market price for potato, for peanuts, for rice, for wheat, for barley, or whatever? So they know the market price in the marketplace, what is its price. So if somebody comes, a middleman, and he says, okay, now you sell your potatoes to me for 2 rupees kg or 3 rupees kg, he has all the freedom to say, well, I won't sell it for 3 rupees because in market, in the retail chain shop, I will get 7 rupees for my potato. So if you are willing to pay me 7 rupees or say around 6 rupees, I'll give it to you because of the transportation cost. But otherwise, he said no. So he knows he can get the right price for his product, for his hard-earned crops. So it is an empowering tool. So he's not dependent on a middleman to carry his product from here to there. He doesn't need to worry about whether his product being not being used or not getting his all the things that he has invested into it. So it empowers people to sell their product to all that they have. He can know what is the rate in the local market, in the bigger market, or international market. He has information just by being in a small village. Isn't that interesting?
It's a real tangible way where the internet, just a bit of information about a market price of a good, gives you a lot of power and keeps you from being cheated or at least used, you know. Let's see here. Someone was talking about a case of plagiarism in the Christian community that hadn't gotten into the secular. Oh, it was from you. Okay, from this group. I didn't really spend more time anywhere else, but. And you said that the secular media had not picked up on the story. What do Christians do? Do we put it on the internet? Do we have a secular, do we have a religious press, or do we keep it hushed up? What did you guys conclude about that?
Well, I don't know. As I said, well, Baptists are concerned because this would definitely be very bad press for the church in Romania. But I think, and the leader we are talking about, let's not name him, he doesn't seem to express any kind of remorse. And I think if we go the biblical way, the Baptist way, somehow we will have new elections. We will.
You're laughing because you equated the biblical way with the Baptist way. So. Yeah.
No, if we go the biblical way or the Baptist way or any other way, you would not do justice to the situation or to the author, which was plagiarized. The churches have a tendency to kind of solve among themselves some of these issues. But I think in this situation it would be better if the leader in question would actually step down from this position, because the whole Christian community in Romania already knows about this situation.
So you're saying that if you guys had a press or you revealed it in some way that forced him to step down, just like you do with a political leader with a bit of bad news, it would be positive, you're saying?
He would have to, yes. In this particular case, I think it would be better for all of us. He would be somehow persuaded to give up on the position, which he hangs on to very
interesting.
Firmly.
Very interesting. Let's see here. Did you guys talk much about the digital divide and how to bridge that? And I know that several things I heard. I heard in that group over there, I heard you guys talking about the expectations for email response. So, you know, you might expect anywhere in the world to be responded to within 24 hours, but you have a friend who has power once every 2 weeks, and so, you know, I think you said a whole ministry plan was scrubbed because you didn't get the email back in time to go forward with the plan. So, anybody have any thoughts about that? How do we use the internet as a tool if it's going to be such a fallible tool in some places? Microphone. I think they want to record it.
It sounds like our group was probably the most negative towards the internet overall.
No, it wasn't. I heard another group. Okay. Was a little, yeah, good.
Well,
and they're all laughing.
Good. We'll collaborate with you. I did say some sarcasm initially on that about the digital divide. Is that we should make it the number one priority of the church to establish to break down the digital divide in order to propagate the gospel throughout the world. In my sarcasm and.
But your point, explain your point.
My point is that it's not, I don't think it's a necessary priority overall, that it shouldn't be something we put to the highest level. Communication's going to have problems, it's always had problems, and we're always going to have to find ways to communicate. The way to do that is to find ways to communicate effectively through multiple means and through multiple paths that enable communication to flow as freely and as quickly as possible, not just relying on the internet. When we rely on the internet solely, we become... people that if that breaks down, we're useless and we're not able to operate.
Redirect it toward a positive thing. So when you're looking at all the infrastructure of the world, phone networks, internet, water, electricity, the environment, that sort of stuff, where should those kind of world-building activities be focused if they're not focused on connectivity and internet and that sort of thing? Obviously, the gospel is primary, right? Okay, and all these things are tools. Even electricity is just a tool. Mm-hmm. So where should the attention be focused if not on the internet? Where would you say?
On things that actually benefit the people's lives more than the internet.
Like?
I can understand the example that, I hadn't considered that example of being able to take out the middleman, when really what you're doing is providing correct information instead of fallacious information.
It's like just weights and measures, sort of.
I think it's beneficial, but the things that are more important, I can live without the internet, but I can't necessarily live without water. I can't necessarily live without a change in human rights. I can't necessarily live without better food, better agriculture. And in those areas, of particularly maybe rural areas of the world, those are more important to me, than bringing them the internet. Sure, they may be able to build a pump, but we've got to come in with the internet and then train them to use the internet.
Right.
When we could come in with people who are trained to build wells and train them to do the same thing. You can accomplish the same goal, I think, and you actually are empowering them through communication and through interaction that's physical.
And what about the flip side of that? You're looking at it from bringing the internet to rural places. What about bringing rural places to the world that's using the internet as their main way of getting information? I mean, the facticity of the world is that a lot of people in America and other countries have their eyes glued to the internet, and that's where they get their news, right? So if there's no digital camera and there's no internet in the rural areas, how will news of the rural areas come to the West? I mean, doesn't it seem like there's also another side to that, bringing the internet information from rural areas to the rest of the world, right? Is that, I'm not trying to
I can see there'd be
too
a flip
clever
side, but if we want to know, we should go. If we want to know, if we're really curious enough, I think we'll find out. We'll take the time to know what's going on around the globe. Unlike Americans, we tend to not want to know that. But sure, it's important, but I don't think it's necessarily something that should be the main goal, or even close to a main goal. That really, it should be connection right now. We used the internet, obviously, and we come from all over the world, but now we are connecting. So there's a benefit there. But to bring the world to the internet, we still got to train them again. We still got to train them on things, the technology that they may not be aware of. And I think for my thinking itself is, what danger do we present to their thinking, to the way they think, by giving them the internet? What dangers do we have in ourselves relying so heavily on internet, to the way we think? Not just what it presents to us in the information, but the technology itself. What is it doing to us? And how does it shape humanity?
Anybody want to take the other side of that? Who's the they that wants the internet, maybe?
Well, I don't know that I want it, but...
Oh, let's get the microphone just a second. So you're gonna speak pro-internet a little bit, right?
Well, as an empowering device. So there's a book called Globalization and Its Discontents by this guy named Stiglitz, I think. Mm-hmm. So globalization, like it or not, it's forcing its will economically, loans, World Bank, World Trade Organization, International Monetary Fund. So globalization economically is the new superpower. I mean, you got China and all that kind of stuff. So internet as a source of information, like it's like right now information. What just happened yesterday in Romania? What just happened 10 minutes ago in the parliament of Israel? All that stuff's... So as a means of information, it can be empowering for those rural communities, because whether we like it or not, somebody's going to come buy my land, our people's land, the forest, the water, the minerals, and going to bring industry in and technology in and natural resources. So as indigenous populations, the internet does provide us some means to position ourselves to build relationships with globalization technologies, but we can do it in our terms. But that means we have to become educated. How does it work? In what ways can we use it? So in the markets for the potatoes in India, it can be used to create, as you said, just maize and balances. And for us as indigenous populations, what about our minerals, our diamonds, our coal, our salmon, our forests? So I think in that context, that kind of information, immediate information, can empower us to work in this whole globalization reality that's largely hegemonic, Western, impositional, and is going to get worse, not less.
I mean, it really is amazing that getting ahead in this world for a long time has been knowing things and keeping those things from other people. Stockbrokers are all really sad about the internet and everyone being able to look up stock prices themselves. And so just being able to keep information obscured from others is a big advantage for the powerful. And so when everyone has that information, it can really unseat, you know, those kind of structures. Oh, excuse me, microphone. So what are you basically pro or con on the internet deal?
Me, I'm pro.
Oh, pro, okay, all right.
Yeah. I figured we needed another
voice
on this side. And also it's from the other direction rather than
of
being here in the United States. I've had the experience of being able to hear what's going on in Palestine, for example, from Lutheran pastors who are in, you know, there's a Lutheran church in the Old City in Jerusalem talking about what just happened yesterday. I read it in the paper and then I see what they say about it. And also a Lutheran pastor who's a Palestinian who is in Bethlehem, and what kind of work is going on there. And it's those kinds of things that I think help Christian leaders here be able to broaden the horizons of Americans who tend to be so internally focused and have, and often don't, unless we make the effort, we'll just get inundated with Britney Spears and all the crap that gets thrown at us through the media, and you can't avoid it in the United States. You can say, I don't want to do this, but you'd be involved with this, but you'd basically have to go live in a cave and keep your eyes shut if you, you know, to avoid it. And so I think it's really important for leaders to be able to share with folks, you know, I heard this from this person I know who's in Jerusalem right now, and this is what they say, irrespective of what the paper says, you know. And so I think that in that way it's a critical tool for us to be able to use that so that we can help folks here see what's really, you know, at least a glimmer of what else is going on in the world, because we get so insulated, it's so hard to find information without the internet.
Now, we've talked a little bit about that kind of, can I redirect for just a minute? What about you guys connecting with each other after this conference? How could the internet really be a part of that? What appeals to you about some of the things I showed, you know, discussion lists and networking and that sort of thing? What are some ways that we can connect as things go forward? Yes?
This was what I wanted to say is that, for instance, there are nowadays video conferences, but it's very up-to-date stuff. So I think it's a wonderful tool to connect with each other, like Messenger or Skype or every other tool.
Right. Tell everyone what Skype is.
Well, Skype is a kind of free internet telephone, which provides imaging tools too. So it's in the same time. It's like telephone, but you can see each other. And I think in spreading the sermon, it's a very good tool. That, for instance, me here could be able to preach, and my people in Romania to listen, or even to watch me. Not now, but perhaps in 5 years or 10 years.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, even now, I mean, the picture's grainy, and it doesn't update every 32 frames per second or whatever, but it's still it's still doable, and the audio can be compressed so people can hear a continuous, nice stream of audio at least. So. Yeah.
And on the other hand, I just want to add that I see the danger to the internet could be could help people to become very individuals, but in the same time, of course, if we use internet with common sense, it's a great tool. Hmm. And I have to emphasize tool.
Yep. Here. So how do we give everyone in the world common sense? That's a good goal. Wouldn't that be great? I know that if you take here's a thought experiment. Physicians are dealing with all of us who know more about specific diseases than they do, perhaps, because they read up on the internet. But they don't have but you know, I haven't been to medical school, and my brother always reminds me of that every time I ask him why this hurts or whatever. But doctors have to deal with people coming in who know 20% of the picture. And they may know that 20% in more detail than the doctor does, but you know, relating that to the rest of the body is very difficult. And so Christian leaders are the same way. I mean, theology is out there on the internet. You name it. You can pick any heresy from the year zero to the year 2007, and it's out there. And there's some modern exponent of that heresy right now on the internet that's, you know, trying to help your people question your sermons or your teaching. So it's very difficult. There's when you unseat power, you unseat good and bad power, and so there's a lot to deal with. Let's see. Yeah.
I would love to see, by the end of this conference, and Mike, I don't know if you could help with this, but some sort of a sheet that we all could put our names on that offers up any internet-based communications that we want to continue with folks. Like if you have basically an email, or if you're also on MySpace or Friends or Facebook, or if you have a Skype ID or your own personal website, that we could all put that down on some sort of piece of paper, make photocopies of it for everyone. Whatever information you would like to give out by the end of the conference.
Yeah, you mentioned the Yahoo group. I think that should be the tool, because we can upload and download all kinds of information.
Right. With the Yahoo group, you can share files as well, and you can we can lock it down so other people in the world can't see what you're talking about. So if you want to talk about, you know, hey, I have a couple in my church that's, I don't know, selling something illegal, how do I deal with it? You know, you can be confidential as well on a Yahoo group. So that's definitely, we'll do that. Yeah. I mean, the Yahoo groups.
The only thing that I like to add with Yahoo groups is some of us are subscribed to quite a few Yahoo groups, even Google groups or whatever groups you want to work with. My common experience with it is unless the Yahoo groups is moderated, it never goes beyond 2 weeks. So if someone doesn't take up the responsibility of moderating the discussions, it's just another group that I'm subscribed to. Well, like the list we have, we might make connection, one-on-one connections on issues that commonly we agree upon. But on a much larger group, I would strongly recommend that it is moderated so that there is continuity of the group. Otherwise, you end up as a member of another group. That's all.
Okay. Are you volunteering?
No.
Do I hear a second?
No.
Okay.
I want to say on the way over here, I'm not against the internet.
Oh no, I know. I was grossly simplifying with the pro
boat.
And con language. You know.
It's a good boat, but I just say consider the boat carefully.
Hmm. I had a couple of things. Two things. We talked about one of the things was the different countries being progressive, and internet can make other countries progressive. And one of the things that I think, as a world Christianity, when we come together, information is good, but there are certain information that people should not see. And I don't know if the churches as a whole with one voice are really doing much about some of the things on the internet and some of the things that should not be on the internet that people shouldn't be seeing, and how we need to
work together. Could you be concrete and tell us what you mean, like salacious things, or do you like pornography and that sort of thing? Or
yeah, I mean, when you look at in the U.S., I mean, I think with internet-wise businesses, the number one money-making thing is pornography.
Right.
And there's, I don't know if the church is really doing much against that as one voice. But with that, on the internet within world, the IWC site, I think it would be a good resource if we can put up the story about someone making a translation of a Bible, and they found out that somebody next door was already doing one. If we have some type of resource where we can write down what are the missionary things that we're doing in other countries, so that we know what are already happening. So if I'm thinking about going on a missionary trip next summer to Nigeria, I can look at and see what are some things that people are already doing. It would be a good one source information encyclopedia of things. And I talked to you also in the U.S. This is something I think would be really useful if there's like some site where there are Bible studies or some type of conferences or things like that that are happening in a certain area. And I don't know if there are sites out there already.
And the idea of calendaring too, having a common calendar. If we can look at a calendaring application like Google Calendar or something. And you all know when people are scheduling various things. You can even schedule with reference to other people. If you know something's happening in a neighboring town, you can schedule something on a different weekend, not to compete with it. That sort of thing is helpful, the reduplication of effort and so forth. What was that?
Well, I mean, I've been following these conversations, you know, very carefully. And our group really is not absolutely against internet. Like I was telling them, I'm a computer science major, and I can easily tell that you are in the field too, or something, you know, somehow or something. Well, what I want to add to this is that we're trying to say whether or not internet is good or bad, or whether it's better than worse. Well, I'm thinking in this world that we are living, I mean, anything, the worst of the worst is good. And philosophically, if you think about it, if there is good, there's got to be bad. And in order to be bad, there's got to be good too. So internet is a good tool, but it can be used to, you know, to harm too. Like you said, anything that's good can be used to harm. So I'm thinking in terms of information, it's the greatest tool, you know. Like they say, internet is the largest library in the world. So to obtain any information about anything, I mean, anything in the world, you can go to the internet and obtain it. But what you're going to use this information to do, I mean, what are you going to use it for is the question, you know. Is what's going to be conducive to the harm that you can bring within internet-based information that you obtain. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And we were talking about globalization of the modern world, you know, digital tools that we have and stuff like that. I'm thinking there is no discipline or aspect of this life that we're living that will be absolutely globalized. Even Christianity, even the gospel will never be. You know, we all know that there are people that won't go to heaven. You know, they'll go to hell. So. I mean, we can't really talking about internet being the best tool to preach the gospel. If we think back in history, Paul instigated the gospel to the Millerists. He didn't have any horse, any car, or whatsoever. He walked to preach the gospel. He didn't have any microphone at all. It worked. But nowadays, we have a microphone, we have internet, we have all different kind of tools. We have airplanes to fly, you know, to go preach the gospel. It works too. So, I mean, God just give us the knowledge, the wisdom to invent, to enhance everyday life, to better do stuff. But if we didn't have what we have today, I mean, it would be done. I mean, the gospel would be preached. That's all there is to it. I mean, we just have the stuff like they say, the computer just is the task, everyday task of humankind and stuff like that, you know.
Well, and everything, every bit of power or knowledge comes with a lot of responsibility. I learned that from Spider-Man, by the way, also from the Bible. But and so, you know, the internet gives us all kinds of information, and I don't know if we as Christians have really been giving much guidance or thought to the world about just the ethics of information. What do you do with information? If you know someone's suffering across the world and you don't know someone's suffering next door, you know, who do you have more responsibility to know about the suffering? And a lot of ethical principles that deal with distance from trouble. Well, we only have no time left, but someone wanted to say goodbye, and I also want to say I put some of my business cards back there. It's kind of really all I have to give you, but it has my name and my email address and so forth, so if you need to get in touch with me. We're going to be putting a list of resources that I mentioned on the website, the IWC website, so you can just link directly to these things. And then Dr. Mike is going to be collecting information that you mentioned about, you know, the AIM IDs, your Skype, your email, and so forth. And so I think eventually we're going to have some way to collaborate, whether it's Yahoo groups or whatever. We have to think through that. We haven't thought through. And the moderation point was a really good one. So we'll figure something out. I'm trying to get Dr. Mike to blog every day, so we'll see if that happens. Thank you so much. I enjoy hearing what you had to say. Thank you.